Do me a favor. Let's welcome everybody online that's jumping into church with us this morning. Let them know we're glad they're here. They're at home in a Snuggie, and you came out. And so we want you to be blessed, whether you're in your Snuggie or in your church best. But, man, we are in a teaching series called Open Handed. The idea is that if you want to be a Christian, if you want to follow Jesus, it is going to require a relinquishing of control, a ceding of power into the hands of a God that sometimes seems aloof, sometimes seems hard to discern what he's up to, why he's allowing some things to continue and why other things change quickly. And so last week we began a journey of kind of looking post-resurrection at a post-resurrected life and challenging you with the question of whose house is this? When it comes to your life, your time, your mind, your body, your thoughts, your possessions, your gifts, your talents, if you really get to the foundation, what is the motivator, the engine in the foundation of what it's really about? Now, we're in church enough to church ourselves enough to say the right answers, but I'm not after mental ascent. I want to push below the surface, surgically looking into to not what you would say the church would say, but what would the actions and the thought life of your mind say. So to found the series, we came out of, I think it's a good idea to do this, we came out of not the opinions of a pastor, but the foundation of the Word of God. And we challenged you to take up the task of memorizing a verse or two that would be a great back pocket verse on days where you're beginning to lose sight of the big picture, lose sight of what every gift that has been given is given for. It comes from Psalm 24, verse 1, and this is what we're trying to put to memory. Psalm 24, 1, it says this: the earth is the Lord's, and the fullness thereof, the world and those who dwell therein. For he has founded it upon the seas, and he has established it upon the rivers. So the point we made is this: there's no aspect of life that God doesn't rightly look at around you and go, mine. Which means God's never taking anything from you. He's only reminding you of who gave it to begin with, of who owned it to begin with before you took stewardship of it. So what's the posture of the believer? The believer, if God founds everything and all good gifts come from God as a gift from him for us to honor and bless others for the glory of his name, then our job is not to own, our job is to steward. And so we inscribe that on a wall in our foyer with one of the core values that we believe are essential to keeping us focused on walking Jesus' way and living the mission Jesus has called us to live, which is simply put this way: we own nothing, we steward everything. If we just say we own nothing, then we go, okay, sera, sera. Whatever will be, it's God's, it's not mine, I'm not dealing with it. But that is not the posture of the believer. No, it's, I have been given a mind, talents, gifts, time, resource that give me the ability to be an ambassador of the kingdom that is coming as this world, as the Bible frequently reminds us, continues to pass away. So I own nothing, but I'm not que sera sera about it. I steward everything because I know the owner. And the owner matters to me. And the owner's been good to me. And the owner leads me. And since the owner blesses me to be a blessing to others, to the glory of his name, I steward, I pay attention to what he has given me and consider not how this can make a difference in my eyes, but how can it make an impact in God's kingdom in his eyes. Simply put, the challenge I would ask you to consider is if you were to stand before your Creator, would the way you lived, the way you stewarded, be an act of worship and a crown you lay at his feet? Or would the way you live currently, the things that concern you, the things that take up your time and consume the gifts that God has given you, be things that when we stand in that moment won't matter at all? If we want to live the Christian way, it comes at the cost of relinquishing the control and the right to sit in the seat of authority over the life that we now live. So we live open-handed. Now, the second you open your hands over your life, there is an enemy that seeks to kill, steal, and destroy, that seeks to raise doubt and question. Doubting is a normal part of your faith. You don't need help from an enemy to doubt more. The devil has never needed an advocate. And if any of you use the vocabulary of just to play the devil's advocate, I just want to rebuke you because he doesn't need one. He's good at his job without having you on his team. So enough advocating for his voice or his point of view. I've got doubts without his help. So what I need in order to stay open-handed is a deepening trust that my Father really has it in his hands. Perhaps one of the greatest movies Disney ever made that you might not have seen is about a man that goes to the moon. That's a complete idiot. And he gets up there and they're on live TV and he's blue because he got sucked into the toilet just before they went live. Y'all remember this? And he begins to sing the song. He's got the whole world in his hands, he's got the whole, and then it starts breaking out into different languages all across the world watching the telecast. I can't remember the name of the movie now that I said it was a great movie. It just completely left my head. Kyle, any help? Kyle doesn't have my help. Okay. It's really obscure, apparently. It's about a man that goes to the moon. Rocket Man, thank God. See? We have too many entertainment choices that the one that was in my head literally left. So you're like, that wasn't in your notes. No, it was not. I made it up on the spot. If you're going to keep your hands open, it requires a deepening trust that he really has it. But there's two constant misses that close our hands. One is what I would call the anxiety of what if. And that's what we're going to look at in the first part of the text today. And the second is the greed of I've earned. We're called to live open-handed. But the way that we move from open-handed to closed-handed is the anxiety of what if and the greed that comes when we begin to look at things and say, I've earned. Now, the Bible addresses this very issue. Last week, we looked at the first chunk of this in Matthew chapter 6, and I want to pick up in a triplet of therefores. That's a fancy way of saying the word therefore is going to appear over a few verses three times. You track it with me, Spartanburg? So you got a triplet of therefores. Now, to set up this text, we're going to jump to the middle of it and then move to the back. So the second therefore comes in verse 31. If you're wanting to make notes, the third therefore is verse 34. And to keep it backwards, the first therefore is verse 25. So if you're not confused, let's now do it in consecutive order. Verse 25, therefore 1. Verse 31, therefore 2. And verse 34, therefore, number 3. We're picking up with the second therefore that comes in verse 31. It says, therefore, do not be anxious, saying, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or what shall we wear? For Gentiles, people that do not believe in God and do not know his shepherding hand, seek after all these things. Your heavenly Father knows that you need them all. Okay. Famous skit. Back in the day, there was an off-color countercultural Saturday Night Live show called Mad TV. Anybody remember that? They used to have like magazines when people read those things. They weren't digital. You'd beg your mom for them, and they had like ad-libs and stuff in it, and you would put inappropriate things in it, which is why you were proof that you're a sinner and you need Jesus. There's an episode of Mad TV, perhaps my favorite, where Bob Newhart was a therapist, and he sat across a desk from a woman who began to spill her life and problems out to Newhart. And in the middle of her spilling out all the reasons she's worried and all the uncertainty of the future and all the anxiety that's keeping her up at night, Bob Newhart looks at her with no announcement, no pause, no nothing. She's still mid-sentence and just says, stop it! And she's appalled. She looks back and goes, excuse me? And he's like, stop it. And she's like, what are you doing? He's like, did that help? When you jump into text of the Bible that say things like, don't be anxious, sometimes it feels like Newhart on the other side of a desk looking at you just saying, stop it. But that's why there's power in the word, therefore. The reason we cannot be anxious is there is a truth that has just been communicated that enables us to be free from what seems so encompassing. Do not be anxious is on the other side of a therefore, which is, in this case, the second therefore, which means it's on the other side of not only a therefore before, but a therefore before that. And what's the therefore? If you go all the way back, the reason we concede the control of what if, according to the Bible, is that there is a master who knows you and is at work in your life and has taken up the responsibility of the stewardship of you. So the reason anxiety is opened and we let go of the what if is because the master has control. Hold that, okay? So the first trap that closes our hand is anxious pursuit. I must secure what I need. I must obtain what I don't have. It's that voice that says, I don't know if I'll have enough, so let me go through every what if scenario about what could happen so that should the comet actually hit, we'll be prepared for comet fallout. It's the constant, I don't know what tomorrow will bring or what's going to happen, but I want to be ready just in case it's not good. It's you being at night the State Farm insurance adjuster that's trying to figure out, do we have sufficient coverage for all of the woes of tomorrow? You tracking with me? I know this voice because I've sat up and listened to it a lot. Corrie Ten Boom said it this way, that anxiety, that what if, that worry, it does not empty tomorrow of its sorrow, it empties today of its strength. It's still there, and you are not Cleo, and you likely didn't predict what it was going to be. All you did was drain today's strength for today's problems, which at the end of this text, verse 34, therefore do not be anxious about tomorrow, for tomorrow will be anxious for its. You're going to have plenty to deal with tomorrow, but God's not giving you energy today to deal with it. Sufficient for the day is its own trouble. God gave you a supply of energy and an ability to deal with today's problems, and sometimes you got to look at them and go, you're not on the clock yet. It's not that it doesn't matter. See, that's the problem. You can't look at anxious people that are ridden with this and go, hey, you know, just don't think about it, because they can't. It's just simply in your mind going, it's not time for that one to be on the clock yet. It's not that problem's hour. It's not that issue's hour to take up strength in my mind and consume me with a full night of sleeplessness in the what if. Now, the second text that we're looking at is over to the right in little t. You have big T, little t. 1 Thessalonians, 2 Thessalonians, then you have 1 Timothy and 2 Timothy. 1 Timothy is written by a guy named the Apostle Paul to his protege, who's a pastor in a young church called Ephesus named Timothy. And he writes to them about the second pitfall, which is what? Anybody remember? The what if of anxiety and the close-handed, when you earn it, called greed. And in 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 9, look at the text. It says this, but those, jumping in the middle of it, and then we'll move back, but those who desire to be rich. This is not the problem. It's this. This is something God gives to a lot of people. It's this that causes God's people to lose complete sight of the mission and purpose for which they were put on this earth for. For those who desire to be rich fall into temptation. And here's what this is saying. It's not saying some. Okay? So I've met a lot of people that are like, I heard that a lot of people that when they win the lottery, their life is ruined, but I like to try and see if I do different. Okay. This is not that case where you're a unique snowflake that's going to handle it different. When your desire becomes possession, riches, you then become a person who will fall into what? Temptation, into a snare, into many, and here's the word. Okay, think about this. Go to a Mesa soccer field. Go to a rec field and watch parents who have the greed of their kids' success at 8 in their heart begin to yell at teenagers who can see because they ran off senior saints who couldn't see, umping games and degrading them with, "That's awful, Blue! Ridiculous!" Let me tell you what that is. That is greed in the heart of little Johnny whose $400 bat doesn't make him a better hitter. And it is taken over the heart, so you're doing senseless things that if I recorded it and showed it to you, you'd be like, "That's stupid." And I can't tell you how many times I took the bait of greed, came to it 3 hours later and went, "What was I doing?" That's why greed's so scary. It's so subtle. You don't know often when you're like, all right, I have a hard time believing that when you're in the temptation of lust, that you didn't know that you were being tempted by lust. Like, it's kind of like, you know, we were just hanging out. We fell into the bed. She's pregnant. You know, like. No, there was a process. Some kids are like, "I want to know about that." There's your ride home conversation with your parents. So a bird, greed though, you think, well, I'm just trying to take care of real needs, because that's the way it masquerades itself. We've got to eat. We've got to have a house. We need a break. These seem like essentials. And what happens in the path of you being the arbiter of what is essential is you end up making greedy, senseless decisions that root out harmful desires and plunge people into ruin and destruction. Here's what anxiety says. Anxiety says, "I don't know if I'll have enough, so I better prepare for the what if. I don't know if I'll have enough." Greed says, "What I have isn't enough." Both close the hands to God. The text that we're looking at, though, specifically Matthew 6, says, "Your Father knows what you need." Your Father knows what you need. See, here's what I'm trying to communicate to you. Anxious pursuit tells you, go secure what you need. Ambitious accumulation says, I must secure more than I have. But what you chase shows what you believe about God. Either God has a plan for your life or he doesn't. Either God is in control or he isn't. Either God is trustworthy or he's untrustworthy. Either God sees what you need or you're on your own. Either God will provide or you better provide for yourself because ain't nobody else going to help. Either God is enough or something else has to be enough. Either your future is in his hands or it's all on your shoulders. Either God sets the limits or you have to keep pushing for more. Either God defines what is enough or you will never know what enough is. And how you answer those questions won't just shape what you believe, it will shape what you chase with what God has given you. Now, anxiety in the first, therefore, lays out why we can let go of anxiety. Look at it with me. Verse 25, "Therefore I tell you, since we have a master," keep in mind that that's the therefore before that, therefore, "since we have a master, therefore I tell you, do not be anxious." We see this twice now after two therefores, "about your life, what you will eat or what you will drink, nor about your body, what you will put on. Is not life more than food and the body more than clothing?" You see, there's some of us, I'm a foodie, and there's times, if I'm being honest, I read that and I'm like, 5:30-ish, the food for the body, it's a lot. Like, it consumes a lot of what I'm thinking about and where we're going to eat. And like I love food. Anybody with me on that? One of the reasons I love Greenville is it's a foodie city. Do you know how many ranked restaurants we have in Greenville? I can't afford to eat at them, so I have to be greedy in order to obtain money. And it's all because, like I like food, and food is a real need. clothes. It's a real need. We're glad you're wearing them. This is not San Francisco. Put your clothes on. What you will eat, what you will drink, the body, nor about your body, what you will put on, is not life more than food and the body more than clothing. Verse 26, here's the apologetic. Look at the birds of the air. Okay? So here's what Jesus is saying. You're running around worried about what you think you have to have, about a responsibility you think you have to carry, but look at the birds. Look at the birds of the air. They neither sow nor reap nor gather into barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not of more value than they? Some of you need to be more like a bird. You're taking responsibility for things that God never asked you to take responsibility for. Birds do not sow, they do not reap, they chirp, they fly, they flock, they try to avoid people in Moonville who want to hunt them. And which of you, verse 27, moving from the birds, by being anxious, consider the fruitfulness of the what if and the anxiety that comes with it, can add a single hour to his span of life? How much of the worry of tonight fixes the problems of tomorrow? I know guys that, my granddad being the chief of them, he lived to be right at 90 years old. And at 88, I was sitting with him and he said, son, I think I'm going to give up smoking. 88 years old. He said, I hear it's not good for you. And I thought, granddad, you're 88. Have at it. If you hadn't smoked, you'd have lived to 135, because apparently 6 minutes of your life went down with every single one of them suckers. And you've been hitting them hard since you were like eight. I also know guys that they work out 7 days a week. They only eat chicken with no seasoning and rice, and they die at 52 of a heart attack. I'm not telling you to misstoward your body. I'm telling you, no amount of worry are you believing that the greed of you doing this over and over again. Because I've met men, especially men, that are like, I have to go to the gym because it's my only stress relief, and I'm going to go 7 days a week for 4.5 hours. And I push in, and you're training like three people at the gym, and you're giving advice, and it's really 30 minutes of a workout and 3.5 hours of avoiding your responsibility. And I just want to remind you, not so gently, that for a lot of us, it's the back and forth with the body. It's the anxiety of, well, if I eat too much fried food, if I don't go to the gym enough, then I'm going to die early. Or it's the greed of, I have to do this, deserve to do this, because I want to live this way, have a body that's this way, be in shape this way, because I can't go and do all the things that I want to do if my body is out of shape. And what ends up happening is it's two closed hands over a body that's been surrendered into the hands of God. And 1 Corinthians chapter 6 says, your body is no longer yours. So if you're going to work it out, and I'm saying many of you should consider. If you're going to go to the gym, it's not to obtain a six-pack. It's to steward a resource to the glory of God. Stop making the aim bicep inches and start making the aim a spiritual emphasis of a body that is able and in shape to be stewarded for the glory of God. You see the tension. Greed goes, I got to have it, even if it costs me my family. I've got to be there, even because I've come too far to throw it away on Thanksgiving. No, have a freaking piece of pumpkin pie. Jesus loves you. Put whip on it. Like, good Lord. Calm down, Arnold. On the other side is the what if and the worry. Well, if we don't, what's it going to look like? Where's it going to be? Look, you have a master. You have a master that frees you up from having to be worried about your outcomes so that you can instead be worried about your obedience. I'm going to say that again. You have a master who has freed you up of the trap of anxiety and the trap of greed so that you can, instead of being worried about outcomes, will I have it? Will we be prepared? I can instead worry about obedience. What would you have me do? You see the shift? This is what the text is getting after. Look at what he goes on to say. No amount of worry, no amount of anxiety adds any to the span of your life. And why are you anxious about clothing? Consider the lilies of the field and how they grow. They neither toil nor spin. Yet I tell you, even Solomon in all of his glory was not arrayed like one of these. But if God so clothes the grass of the field, which today is alive and tomorrow is thrown into the oven, will he not much more clothe you, O you of little faith? This is not an issue of not having enough. It's not an issue of not possessing enough. It's an issue of not trusting a father. That's the real issue. You see, Jesus doesn't deny that these are needs. He just redirects it to the real root problem, which is a matter of trust. The Father feeds birds. The Father clothes the fields and the flowers. The Father knows what you need. And here's the challenge of anxiety. Anxiety is often rooted in grasping for what your Father has already taken responsibility for. I heard a story about a father and a son that went on a backpack trip, and it was a couple days, and they were going to journey each day together. And the first day, the father's fit, strong, able, carries the backpack with all their stuff in it, no problem. The son, feeble, weak, skinny, scrawny, i.e. what I was until about, 30. It's just enjoying the journey. Dad's pointing out flowers, animals, scenic views, different things. They're talking about life and dreams and hopes for the future. They're just enjoying time together. But the son begins to recognize that the dad's carrying a backpack and he's not, and he wants to be like his dad. So that night around the campfire, he says, tomorrow, I want to carry the pack. And his dad says, son, this weighs more than you weigh. And he's like, but dad, I want to pitch in and carry the pack. Father said, well, if you want to, you can, but I don't need you to carry the pack. So the next morning, they wake up, they pack everything up, and the son puts the pack on. In a deep squat, he tries to get up, cannot do it. So the father literally comes and helps him lift up into it. It weighs on his shoulders. All of a sudden, what they were moving at a nice, brisk pace turns into a slow, methodical pace. The son's not talking. The son's not looking. The son's just literally being consumed by everything that's on his shoulders. He misses views, he misses flowers, he misses animals. He can't even muster up the breath to have conversation with his father. Meanwhile, the father's standing there wanting to take the pack back off the shoulders of the son, but he doesn't want to deny his son the opportunity to feel like he's contributing. How many of you can't see the view, can't see the flowers, can't see the animals, can't enjoy the journey, can't have time to pray, don't have time to be with the father, all because you're trying to carry the pack of stuff that you've not been called to take responsibility for? See, this is the problem. A lot of you are running around with closed hands around what ifs that God never asked you to worry about the outcome of. You see, it's not just worry, it's misplaced responsibility. Charles Haddon Spurgeon, the Prince of Preachers, said it this way: anxiety doesn't empty tomorrow of its sorrows, it only empties today of its strength. It doesn't empty tomorrow of its sorrows, it empties today of its strength. So, if you're going to live the Christian life, it's going to have to be open-handed. And the biggest, perhaps, challenge that comes for new believers particularly that are learning to trust in a faithful but oftentimes unseen Father is trusting God enough with the outcomes to keep the hand open. Tracking? The other extreme is greed. That comes back to 1 Timothy chapter 6. Let's go back there and look at it together. 1 Timothy chapter 6, pick it up in verse 6. Paul, giving instruction to the church, says this: but godliness, living God's way, which would be another biblical word, would be righteousness, living godly, God's way, with contentment is great gain. When your goal is to live God's way, and that becomes the priority of your life, and you're content with that being your purpose, there is a gain, a richness that comes from it. In a couple months, some of my really good friends, Cecil and Tracy Ramos and their boys, are going to be over here stateside. And they've made it their life mission to live Jesus' way. And they would never say this, they would never broadcast it, but they came 2 years ago, and we were in the middle of a chaotic good time. Growth was happening left and right. We're trying to figure it out. Everything system-wise was breaking in the church, and so I was constantly consumed with, like, how are we going to fix it? How are we going to keep up with it? And so Cecil comes into that, and he just slows everything down because he had a different priority. His priority was, I came here to love God and to be with Russ. And I'm like, I don't have time, Cecil. I can't schedule you in, Cecil. I don't know when we're going to get to do this, Cecil. I got to go here. I got to do that. He's like, I'm just going with you. So we get in the car, and he's like, hey, can we do something we do in Thailand? And I'm like, what? Because when you're a pastor, you're supposed to have it together, and everything's supposed to be working fine. And so he gets in the car, and I'm like, we're supposed to bless him. And now here he is sitting in my car, and he goes, I just want to pray for our day. And I'm like, pray. And he begins to pray, and he's like, Lord, just direct our steps. Lord, we have where we want to go, but God, there's your agenda. So lead us to where you want to go. And I still remember it, because here's what's crazy. You know what's crazy? We did nothing that was on my list of things to do. And instead, we're talking to a painter in downtown Greenville about faith in Jesus. And we're just like sharing, and I'm like, oh my gosh. Like, all because the center focus of my buddy was to prioritize life God's way. And somehow, subtly, the greed of accomplishing, the greed of getting it done, had seeped into my life rhythm to where I was no longer seeing what was along the trail of life. How many of you have a other goal other than godliness, an other goal other than God's way of living that motivates your actions? It's subtle, but let me tell you what the Bible calls it. Greed. I want more than what God gives. I want more than what God calls. Which then feeds, here's what's crazy. Anxiety and greed, they produce each other. I'm anxious about what I don't have or what I may need, so I become consumed about getting it. Which then whenever I get it, I get anxious about keeping it. In both directions, I've now closed my hands from God using it. Am I making sense to anybody? For we brought, here's a little sobering reminder, we brought, what's the word? In Hebrew, it means nothing. In Greek, it means nothing. In today's language, it means nada, which is a modern day vernacular of saying, this word means squat, zero. We brought zero into the world, and we cannot take anything out of the... Here's your best case scenario. We bury all your stuff with you, and 100 or 1,000 years should Jesus tarry later, they excavate it and put it on display at the Biltmore House. Best case scenario. Come see Pharaoh's treasures. He's dead. Yet for some of us, like, all we care about is the lake house, the boat, the status. It's not for the kids. Your kids don't need extravagant sandals vacations. They need their parents to be present. You want that because you've got your identity rooted in greed. If you drove them to Lake Lyman and actually hung out with them, it would make more memories than you driving them to Lake Havasu and renting a boat and going into debt. But greed has blinded you to the main thing, and you continue to say the right thing to dismiss the poor fruit. I have to work. I have to put in more time. Your job needs you more than you need your job. Let me be very clear. And your family needs you more than they need your money. Better to live a simpler lifestyle than to live an absentee life from your family. Better to live a simpler life where your kids don't get every opportunity to achieve their goals as if they are the idols to be worshipped, but instead continue to have constraints put on some of the opportunity for the sake of the family being present with the community of Christ. I'm living in the tension, ladies and gentlemen. We got called by 3 travel teams last week alone to pick up. I've already been asked by two to pick up next weekend. Let me tell you what my answer is. Hell no. Because I've had enough of it. I've had enough of it. I'm done. Some of you are offended by that, and that's the only thing you've been offended by. Oh, trust me, you weren't going to make it here no way. Let me go and help you. What does Paul say? I want you to think about this. This is his resting spot. If we have food and clothing. Anybody in the house not have food and clothing? Because if not, I got you. I've got more than I need. In fact, I've outgrown some clothes just for you. That's how much I got. I would say probably just about everybody in this room has this. With these things, we will be. Can you? Are you? Verse 9, look at it with me. But those who desire, motivated by, driven by, to be what? We sing about it, don't we? We celebrate it. We modernize it. Upgrades upon upgrades. Some of you are dating someone that desires to be rich. Run. Run. The desire to be rich, they fall into temptation, into a snare, into many senseless and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and into destruction. It's for review. Anxiety doubts God's provision. Anxiety doubts God's provision. Greed rejects God's sufficiency. So what's the remedy? Matthew 6:33. Look at it with me. What's the remedy? If anxiety doubts the provision of God, if greed rejects the provision of God, then the remedy is Matthew 6:33. But seek. The same way you desire the house, the stuff, the car, the same way you sit up worrying at night about the what ifs, that same thing that you're doing, it's a symptom of misplaced focus and attention. Instead of seeking the answers to what if, instead of being consumed with what I want more, seek first, above all else, the kingdom of God and His righteousness, and all these that you're worried about, up night going, well, what if, that then leads you to, if you get them, I earned it, it's mine, I deserve it, it's closed in. All these things that you need, that God knows you need, and even some beyond it, because He blesses us way beyond what we deserve, will be added to you. Seek first the kingdom. Seek first God's kingdom. Here's what I'm trying to say. This word contentment we've been throwing around this morning, contentment is trusting that what the Father has given is enough for obedience today. I am content with the fact that everything I have today is enough for me to accomplish the mission that God has called me to do today. Will it mean my marriage will be better in a month? I don't know. Will it mean that I'll be out of debt in 5 years on the Ramsey plan? I don't know. It means that I am content with being obedient now rather than having excuses over worries that I cannot control in the future about why I'm not taking what God has given me in the present to make a difference. Verse 34, Matthew 6:34, do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow has enough worry for itself. Anxiety loosens when we trust the Father's care. Greed loosens when we trust the Father's wisdom. I just want to encourage you. You don't have to grasp for what the Father already holds. God is not closed-handed towards you. And you don't have to chase what the Father hasn't promised. Your plan, your idea of good, it doesn't compare to the good that God has in store for you. So a couple takeaways. Number one, notice your worry. It's not a sin, it's a symptom. The temptation to worry, it's not a sin, it's a symptom. It's a symptom that I am not trusting God with something. It may be kids, it may be job, it may be my future, it may be family problems, it may be battles. Ask yourself this week, what am I most worried about right now? And daily commit to giving it up to Him in prayer. God, this is not mine. It belongs to You. It's not mine. It belongs to You. This doesn't mean I check out mentally. It means that, God, I steward it under the direction You give me. Notice your worry. Number two, practice thanksgiving. I talk about this a lot. I'll have what they call in the Pentecostal church praise breaks, where I just have to stop and give thanksgiving to the goodness of God. And look, I was raised Methodist, where it was like, but you'll catch me in my car on the side of the, like the other day in front of the building next door, like I had a full on, God, thank You. Thank You. When's the last time you had a praise break? Man, it helps you remember, man, I'm not alone. I'm not an orphan. I have a Father. He knows my needs and He's providing. Another takeaway I like. Ready for this one? Stop chasing more. Stop it. I mean, Bob Newhart, I don't know what to say. Just stop. Like, quit. I caught myself this week in the preparation of this sermon measuring the back of my house for an addition that I won't be able to afford for 2 decades. It's 8:30 in the morning, and Morgan comes out, and I'm in my muumuu, and I got a tape stretched across, and she's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, measuring. And she's like, for what? I'm like, an addition. She's like, our kids won't be here by the time you build it. You're right. Like, enough's enough. Johnny Rockefeller, the richest man in New York, they asked him, how much money was enough? And he said, a little bit more. That's what greed does. How much house is enough? A little bit more. How many cars are enough? A little bit more. See, this is how greed works. How much vacation is enough? A little bit more. How many spouses are enough? It's not a joke for some of you in this room. A little bit more. Welcome to 4 Points. I want you to know the joy of the moment where you let go, genuinely trusting and knowing, man, I have a Father. And He sees every sparrow that falls from the sky, and He clothes the fields with flowers and dresses them better than I could ever dress myself. And He has made me in His image. He has redeemed me by the blood of His Son. He knows my need. Man, all right. Can you do He Knows My Name? I know. Stand up. Let's respond.